Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the return of the Issue Is debate. Tommy Lahren on the right, Ethan Behrman on the left. But first, we get to one of the candidates for United States Senate from California, Barbara Lee. She's back in our studio on a week when the big story in Washington has been the debt ceiling. She voted against the president's bipartisan deal. Why'd she do that? We talked to her about how she separates herself amongst the field. We talked to her about her family. We talked to her about reparations. Lots of interesting issues with Barbara Lee. Before, we had to Tommy and Ethan and a debate over wokeism, the Dodgers, Ron DeSantis, Gavin Newsom, and more. But let's begin with the Congresswoman from Oakland, Barbara Lee.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee from Oakland, one of 46 Democrats in the House to vote against it. She's here on the Issue Is. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Glad to be back.
So the president wanted people to vote for this. The Democratic leader wanted people to vote for this. Why'd you vote against it?
Well, first, let me just say this was a manufactured crisis, first of all, with the MAGA extremist Republicans. And I believe that they actually wanted the country to go into default. Those of us who voted against it never would allow the country to go into default. We actually, way back last year, wanted to do the debt ceiling vote then. We also had a discharge petition. Of course, all Democrats signed that. And we also talked about the 14th Amendment. And so we've been pushing hard not to default. And so when we looked at the deal, and I have to tell you, the president did a phenomenal job. It was lose-lose, really, with Kevin McCarthy and the MAGA Republicans really wanting to go into default, that I decided when I saw that the work requirements were going to be disproportionately impacting black and brown women with children. Students now are going to have to repay these loans. I mean, there were some provisions in there, and as an appropriator, looking at it and how much our discretionary domestic spending is going to go down $1 billion, I had to represent my constituents and the 20 million people here in California who are one paycheck away from poverty.
So when you say you weren't going to let there be a default, if this came down to just you, because there was enough votes where there was a margin here, if this came down to just you and it was vote for this or have a default, would you have voted differently?
Well, let me tell you, we all talked and we knew that it wasn't going to come to that. We knew that Kevin McCarthy, he was supposed to put up, and he almost put up, 150 votes, even though Democrats put up more votes than he did. And so we knew from day one how many votes there were. And so we decided there's some of us who are going to take on these MAGA extreme Republicans and McCarthy and really wanted to make sure that the public understood there's some of us representing those who are one paycheck away from poverty.
So you were able to vote for this because you didn't have to worry about the default.
We knew there was not going to be a default once we counted the votes.
So we know the votes on this were different among the candidates for Senate. You voted against this. Katie Porter voted against this. Adam Schiff voted for it. He once put up a tweet where he explained his rationale. He said this: "Today I voted to stand with Californians and stop a disastrous default, a default that would have killed jobs and skyrocketed unemployment. This bill was far from perfect, but President Biden negotiated an end to McCarthy's hostage taking. I will always do what's best for California families." Why is he wrong? And what does this whole episode tell us about how you would be different as a senator?
First, he's not wrong. That's what would have happened. We all said that. I'm on the Appropriations Committee, and so I have to look out for budget cuts. I have to look out for those who are living on the edge. I have to look out for people who need their government to work for them. And in fact, I believe for myself that this was the right vote because we have to take on these MAGA extremist Republicans. That was their bill. The president did the best he could, and he did do a good job. But we started with a clean debt ceiling. Tell me, when have we had a budget negotiation, an appropriations negotiation connected with the debt ceiling vote? We lifted it three times under Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so, no, we knew it was going to pass, and we understand and clearly understand, tried to avoid a default even last year.
But if he were to say, you know, this is the sort of responsible adult thing would be to vote for this and back the president, you say what?
I say the responsible adult thing was to recognize that no one was going to allow this country to go into default. And there's some of us who have to stand up to these MAGA extremist Republicans, and some of us who have to look out for those 20 million people who are one paycheck away from poverty in California.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of those people, because you're pushing legislation in the House right now called the Deposit Act. We want to put this up on the screen so people can look at the bill. Essentially, what this does is it allows for low-income people to get federal help with a security deposit. And this is for a lot of people that may be, as you mentioned, one paycheck away from potentially being homeless. How would this work, and do you have the votes to pass it?
Well, first, let me say, being here in Los Angeles is really exciting for me. Mayor Bass is doing a phenomenal job with her housing policies. And it's tough, but she's doing a really phenomenal job. And I'm really looking at how she's doing this as it relates to housing. And yes, so many people need that money, $5,000-$6,000. For a deposit so that they can have a decent place to live. That's part of what an affordable housing strategy is about. And we need HUD, our Department of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, to invest in deposits assistance for people so that they don't live on the streets. That's a way to keep people or to provide affordable housing. It's a strategy, and we're working hard to get that passed. Of course, we know we're in the minority, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to work with Republicans. I have many Republicans I'm working with on repealing the authorization to use military force, where I was the only one who voted against it.
Right.
And so I have to have hope, and I'm going to continue with it. And when I get in the Senate, if it doesn't pass by then, I'll keep it up in the Senate.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Senate race itself. We have some images of you out on the campaign trail recently interacting with Adam Schiff. You met him at the California convention, the Democratic convention. You did an event with Katie Porter and Adam Schiff. What do you guys say to each other behind the scenes? What's your dynamic like?
Well, we work together. We're colleagues. But we're different. You know, I have a lens that they don't have. They have lenses that I don't have. And I want to be in the Senate because it's certainly lacking diversity, first of all. There's no candidate in the race who looks like me and who's had the experience that I have had. Since 1789, there have been only two black women serving in the Senate, Senator Carol
Mosley-Braun
and our vice president. A total of 10 years since 1789. And so what I bring to the Senate is more diversity, more equity, more inclusion, and a new perspective that needs to be part of representation.
Well, right now, every California statewide official that has endorsed anyone has endorsed you. We've got some images of the people that have endorsed you so far in this race. You've done very well with some high-profile endorsements, but you are still trailing in fundraising and name ID and polling. A lot of people don't know your story yet, which is why it's good you're coming on a show like this. But where do you see the state of your campaign, especially coming off the California Democratic Convention last week, and in terms of the strategy going forward?
Well, when you look at the polling, what takes place, though, is once people get to know me, know my story, my experience, and what I have done to make life better based on many of my lived experiences, it's neck and neck. And so what we have to do is communicate to people how effective I've been. And I have a lot of courage and conviction, and I'll stand my ground. And as an independent, if I need to, taking on both parties. And so last week at the convention, it was really exciting. I mean, I've been part of this Democratic Party forever. I helped form the Progressive Caucus, the Peace Caucus, the Poverty Caucus. I'm a member of the DNC. I was on the drafting committee for the platform for two presidential elections. And so the Democratic Party activists know me, and they know who I am, and they know that my experience and my background is a standard that I'm going to continue with in the Senate.
I mean, does it feel a little bit like your life's work all coming together, walking through those halls and seeing all those faces?
It was really wonderful to see so many, and so many people, so much diversity, so many people who heretofore had not been part of our Democratic Party, and to see everyone, of course, after COVID, to see everyone together, it was remarkable. It really told me why I have to win this race, because a lot of these people haven't been seen before. A lot of people at the grassroots level work so hard to elect Democrats, but then Democrats are elected and they, you know, move forward.
Yeah.
And so I want them to know that I'm there, have been there for them, and will be there for them.
We've done something with both of your colleagues in the Senate race called the four questions we're going to do with you now. This is a rapid fire first thing that comes to your mind about the Senate job, okay? What do you think is the biggest issue domestically?
ending the filibuster.
What is the biggest issue internationally?
Global peace and security and our national security strategy.
What is the Senate committee you would most like to serve on?
Appropriations.
And who is the modern senator that you respect the most?
I am not going to answer that question.
Okay, we respect it. I guess it's plead the fifth, so we just got to plead the fifth on this, the Andy Cohen game. We know that you could potentially be serving with other black women in the Senate. This year is an exciting year. We've got some images of this, there's four different women, including you, that are now serious contenders around the country as potential black female senators. As we know right now, there are none. Are you all sort of communicating with each other? Is this a sisterhood amongst yourselves?
Yes, we are. Yeah. One is not enough.
Yeah.
One is not enough. Since 1789, only two. We have a long way to go. But four of us are working together, and we're going to make sure each and every one of us are elected.
What's the difference of having a black woman in there?
Our experiences are different. First of all, when you look at us as Democrats, we've been the heart and soul and the backbone of the Democratic Party. We work hard to get Democrats elected. Mm-hmm. But we haven't had necessarily a seat at the table in the Senate except for a total of 10 years. Yeah. Secondly, we have lived experiences where our understanding of intersectionality, how poverty intersects with the lack of housing, affordable housing and health care, and we want everyone to have a seat at the table. I've worked to make sure that there's equality with the LGBTQ plus community, with the disability community, our seniors, our young people, mm-hmm. communities of color, African American, everybody. And so black women bring a perspective of fighting for everyone to make this country better. It's about strengthening this country.
One of the issues that California is debating right now is the issue of reparations. There is a push by some that there should be cash payments made to black Californians. There are others who say that's not fair because the Californians who were involved with slavery haven't been around for generations. What say you?
Well, first, let me applaud Governor Newsom for signing the bill, setting up the task force, and our Secretary of State, Shirley Weber, for her leadership on this. Secondly, reparations is an international concept, first of all. When there are crimes against humanity, slavery, when generations of people have been affected, not by individuals, but government policies, mind you, and the enslavement of African Americans Africans for 250 years in this country, then racism, Jim Crow, Reconstruction, there's generational trauma, first of all. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the wealth gap, the economic gap, the healthcare disparities, the mass incarceration rates. When you look at the disparities, reparations is an international concept which needs to be applied here. We supported the reparations for Japanese Americans, for so many groups that have been discriminated against and held enslaved and brutalized in this country. You've got to repair the damage. And finally, I'll just say I have my own bill that's calling for a Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Commission. The transformation is reparations. But in this country, we have to have a truth-telling moment. People don't understand what the government-sanctioned institution of slavery has done and why we see police misconduct, why we see disproportionate rates of black people dying from COVID. There's a connection. And this truth-telling moment will help heal and bring people to the point where they say, yes, we've got to repair this damage so that no more generations of African Americans have to suffer like we have suffered. And it's not about individual payments. It's about the government-sanctioned institution repairing the damage.
So does that mean not necessarily cash payments?
It means whatever, like H.R. 40, it's a commission to study.
Yeah.
And I think that our task force in California, they'll come up with whatever recommendations are important, and then we'll take it from there.
We want to get to know you a little bit more. So we know it was recently Memorial Day, and you celebrated your father with a great picture of him and his service, and also have recently celebrated your mother. There's a nice picture of you and your mom. What's the most important lesson you learned from your parents?
My mother told me as a child, born and raised in El Paso, Texas. Of course, I told you my story about coming to Southern Cal, San Fernando Junior High and San Fernando High School, first black cheerleader there. Can't is not in the dictionary. So regardless of the barriers and the challenges, understand that you've got to dismantle those, break them up, and move forward, and do it not just for yourself, but for everyone. My dad served in World War II and in Korea, and I always remember him in his uniform, proud black man, served in the 92nd Battalion in Italy, supporting the Normandy invasion, saying he wanted to buy a house in San Leandro, California, where coming from Southern California to visit my family, aunts in Northern California, you have to drive around San Leandro because they burn crosses. It was that racist. Mm. Okay? My dad said, I want to buy a house there. They ran him out of town. Today, I represent San Leandro. Okay, and tells me, and my dad said, you've got to keep hope, you've got to keep fighting, you've got to keep demanding. And, you know, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And they were both, in their own way, fighting for their children to have the opportunities that every child deserved in this country, but also saying it's not for you guys only, it's for everybody who are facing these challenges.
What do you think they would think of you running for the Senate, or the possibility of you taking that oath?
Well, I hear my mother, she passed away 8 years ago. I hear her telling me, stay strong, don't get angry, stay focused. And remember, I said the can't is not in the dictionary. And my dad would say to me, don't let them send our troops into harm's way. He was the first one that called me after I was the only one who voted against the authorization to use force after the horrific events of 9/11. He called me and he said, that's the right vote. Military officer, proud lieutenant colonel, retired. He said, yes. He said, I'm a veteran. I'm a military man. But in 3 days after this attack, you've got to make sure you're strategic. You make sure the response is rational. Don't you give authority to the away to any president until you know what you're doing. So he was the first one who called me. So he'd be very proud in guiding me through this madness right now in this country.
What a story, their story, and what a story, your story as well. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Our thanks to Barbara Lee, now to Tommy Lahren and Ethan Bierman. But let's begin with some sound from Ron DeSantis.
And I will be able to destroy leftism in this country and leave woke ideology on the dustbin of history.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis making that vow during an interview on the Fox News Channel this week. Does leftism need to be destroyed? Let's debate that and more with two of our favorites. An issue is debate. Joining us here in studio representing the left is Ethan Bierman. He is a professor at Loyola Law School, and he is the owner of the Bierman Law Firm. And on the right, joining us, Tommy Lahren is back. She's a commentator on Fox News and Fox News Radio. She's also the host of Tommy Lahren is Fearless on OutKick. She's joining us from her home base in Nashville, Tennessee. And Tommy, Ethan, before we start, Ethan, can we concede one thing, that Tommy Lahren is indeed fearless?
Yes, I'll go with that. I'll concede. Tommy is fearless.
Yeah, great to have you back, Tommy.
Oh, it's so great to be with you guys. You know, I have to say, I am happy that I'm in Tennessee, but I have a lot of love for California. I keep up with everything that you guys are doing there, so I'm excited to have a great discussion. Very spirited, I'm sure.
Well, let's start by talking about a governor you like probably a lot more than our governor, Ron DeSantis, and his vow that leftism needs to be destroyed. Do you agree with that? Is that a bit over the top?
No, it absolutely isn't. And when we're talking about leftism, we're not talking about Democrats or the Democrat Party. We're talking about wokeism. We're talking about radical leftism. And I 100% agree with our governor that that needs to be destroyed. And you're seeing a lot of Americans, not just on the conservative side, rejecting wokeism because it's just simply gone too far, as we've seen, especially in the last few months. So conservatives, and I believe just rational Americans in general, are putting a stop to it with their wallets and with their feet, as you see the great exodus from California. Sorry about that, guys. But I think leftism is already being rejected. And I think that a governor, Ron DeSantis, and a president, Ron DeSantis, would eliminate it and just get us back to the good old conservatives, liberals, Democrat, Republicans. I think we can move forward with that.
Ethan, your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the regressive party, of course, speaks its mind through this idea of ending anybody who opposes them. We're seeing that in legislation in red states across the United States right now, denying the existence of certain people even, and refusing to teach the history of what actually has happened in this United States. Of course, destroying any other political party in any any rational mind like that, if the only thing that needs to be destroyed in this world is Nazism and the idea that we kill people whom we disagree with. So, no, obviously, we need people with different political ideologies to have rational, growing debates that challenge our beliefs so we can progress as a nation. Look, if you destroy the idea of what Tommy just described as leftism, you would still have slavery. You would not have a Civil Rights Act. Women wouldn't be able to vote. And, you know, transporting minors across state lines might have a different outcome than they are today. That's actually progressive politics that got those things taken care of.
Tommy?
Well, let's also keep in mind, I don't know if Ethan is a history buff, but let's keep in mind it was actually the Republican Party that ended slavery. So I just want to note that for him. But again, I find this very frustrating when folks on the left talk about how the right or conservatives want to eliminate people. Saying that we don't want adult men dressed in drag gyrating in front of children does not mean we want to eliminate drag queens or gay people or trans people. We want to keep the integrity of women's sports. We want to protect children from grooming and sexualization. That's not eliminating absolutely anybody. But of course, this is what the left has to put forward, that somehow the right wants to eliminate or even kill people that we disagree with. No, no, no. Not at all. We simply want to keep the innocence of children and women's spaces for women. I don't think that's too much to ask for.
Well, I mean, look, it's way beyond what you just described, and you also conflated numerous issues. Let's also start with the basics of history, which actually is a topic that I enjoy quite a bit. The Republicans of the 1860s were liberals, and it was the switch in the early 1960s that happened between the Republicans and the Democrats. Liberals were the ones, leftists were the ones who fought against things like slavery. Liberals, Jews, black people, those white people with progressive minds were the ones who fought for the Civil Rights Act and fought against the white people in the South who viciously attacked, brutalized, and murdered people simply for wanting equal rights. We're seeing the leading edge of that right now. By the way, attacking a Target store for putting up an LGBTQ display to be inclusive, yeah, that's violence to destroy a piece of private property in that case. And it's not healthy for anybody to do that.
Okay, Alex, I'm seeing the gaslighting here, and I have to just jump in. Okay, I don't know if you guys remember 3 years ago, but my local Target was boarded up because of the BLM Summer of Love. So when I hear somebody saying that conservatives are somehow destroying property at Target, I'm sorry, I'm waving the BS flag, and I hope you can see it in California. That's utterly ridiculous. Target has had pride displays for many years, and no one took issue with them. It wasn't until you had the tucking bikinis and you started putting this paraphernalia on children's clothes, targeting children, that we had an issue. So we have every right to be capitalists and to vote with our pocketbooks, and we are doing that with Target. We did it with Bud Light. And from the party that literally invented cancel culture, that literally wanted to cancel everybody from 2020 on, I find it really rich the Democrats are now crying over the boycott of Bud Light and Target.
Well, Target actually sold those bikinis in years past, but we don't need to get into the specifics of the Target sales. Let's talk about this issue, which was another thing that got a lot of attention here locally. The Dodgers ended up in the middle of all this fight over wokeism as well. This week, pitcher Clayton Kershaw announced that the Dodgers Christian Values Night is coming back. Kershaw says he was upset, he's a big-time Christian, by the team's decision to honor the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence on Pride Night. The Sisters, got some video of them, call themselves queer and trans nuns. They've done a lot of community work over the years, especially on HIV and AIDS. Ethan, your take on all of this, what happened with the Dodgers and the Sisters here?
Well, I mean, the Dodgers stepped their foot in it. And by canceling one group, then inviting them back, I mean, look, Clayton Kershaw's not wrong. If you're going to be open to inviting one group and celebrating them, he's not wrong to say, hey, look, guess what? There are a lot of Christians in our community, and they want to celebrate their values, too. Look, I think that the nuns should be celebrated. I think people who do real community work to help their communities should be celebrated, should be honored. And those who actually do things to help should be the ones at the forefront of that. Now, if you're going to falsely wave your flag and claim something that you're really not, you know, I have a different story of that. But I believe Clayton Kershaw is absolutely sincere in his beliefs, and he's not wrong here.
Tommy?
We have a little bit of agreement on this, so I'm happy that we can find, you know, a mutual understanding on something. So there's a point for us. I'm happy to see the unity here. But again, I don't think there's a problem with having a Pride Night or celebrating groups that do something for the LGBTQ community. I mean, this is LA we're talking about here. I don't expect anything different from that team or that area or that state. All right, I understand it's California. But inviting a group that essentially mocks Catholic people, that has men dressed as nuns dancing and gyrating about having hunky Jesus competitions, I mean, that's blasphemy. So that's why a lot of Catholics and a lot of Christians were very upset by this. So I'm happy that there are some speaking out. But I'll also say this. We have put athletes in a really bad spot right now because they just want to play their sport for everybody, for every fan. Sports is very inclusive, right? But when you start having special nights and inviting certain groups and celebrating certain ideologies and making the players join in it, that's when you're going to run into issues. And that's exactly what we're seeing right now, not just with the Dodgers, but basically sports in general.
This is the free state of California. Eat your heart out, Florida and Texas.
It took Governor Newsom less than 20 seconds to bring up Texas and Florida during his recent speech at the California Democratic Convention. He insists he never, ever, ever wants to run for president ever. Back with our panel, Tommy Lahren on the right, Ethan Bierman on the left. Tommy, you've got a take on Governor Newsom and his future.
Yeah, I believe that he's angling to be the Democrat 2024 nominee. And I think it's quite obvious if you see that the constant attacks on especially Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who I think Gavin wants to be his future opponent, right? And then you also see President Joe Biden. I mean, just the other day, he had a really bad fall at the U.S. Air Force Academy graduation. You know, at this point, I think the Americans are starting to understand that this man is probably not capable of doing the job now, and certainly not for another 4 years if he were to be reelected in 2024. So I think as things progress worse for Biden, I think that Gavin Newsom is going to sail in there. I think he is going to be the nominee. And I think if it's a Gavin Newsom-Ron DeSantis matchup, boy, are we in for some fireworks. And I actually hope to see it because I think that would be a fair fight. And I think that'd be good for the American people.
And who are you supporting there? Ethan, do you agree?
Well, really interesting. For the second time, Tommy and I agree on numerous aspects of what she said. Obviously, I fundamentally disagree with her about President Biden, who's gotten more done in 2 years here. The CHIPS Act, the PACT Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, just resolved the major budget issue, negotiated better than the previous president, not expected to have an indictment coming down in the near future. But I totally agree with Tommy. I think Gavin Newsom and Governor DeSantis in 2028, not 2024, in 2028 is the pair up to watch for. I think it'll be exciting. And of course, I think Gavin Newsom is the next president in that situation.
And Ethan, do you think that the Democrats, which Tommy, are you suggesting that they're going to like dump Joe Biden somehow or that Newsom starts running against Biden? How does that happen?
So I think if it looks as though Ron DeSantis is going to be our nominee on the Republican side, I think that there will be some talks within the Democrat Party, and I think they will convince Joe to step aside because it's quite obvious that he is on his way out. If you watch him speak, if you watch him walk, I think it's quite obvious that the man is failing physically and cognitively. Ethan can say whatever he wants about the things that he's ramrodded through, but the fact remains, I think any honest American looking at this president knows that he is simply too old to be serving in this position and should not run again. All right. And I know that there is going to be that obstacle for the Democrats of Kamala Harris, but her approval ratings are even lower than Joe's. All right. So I don't think that they're going to take a risk. I think that they are going to convince her to step aside. And I think Gavin Newsom is going to be the nominee. I think they think Joe could beat Trump, but I think they very well know that Joe could not beat a Ron DeSantis.
Good luck, and they want
Gavin to come in and fill that spot.
Good luck convincing Kamala Harris to step aside, especially for Gavin Newsom, considering their background together. But let's talk about the race as it is right now, because Donald Trump right now is the front runner on the Republican side, not Ron DeSantis. And there's about to be some new entrants into the race. Former Vice President Mike Pence expected to get into the presidential race next week. Also expect to get into the race next week, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Do either of these guys have a shot Tommy, and why are they getting in?
No, they simply do not. Okay. Mike Pence, I mean, that might be even worse than a Nikki Haley. He has absolutely no shot, no chance. He's not going to get these so-called mega Republicans. He's not going to get conservative Republicans. He's not going to get establishment Republicans. He might get a few rhino Republicans, and that's going to be about it. He is not going to be popular with the new Republican movement, the America First movement. Simply ridiculous. Chris Christie, again, he's trying to make fetch happen. He's trying to resurrect himself. Again, not going to happen. That man goes after Donald Trump. He goes after Ron DeSantis. And he's just not going to be popular. He's not going to resurrect what maybe he once had. So, again, this is a Ron versus Don race. Everybody else is in it for name ID clout and maybe to make some money. But that's about it.
He's trying to make fetch happen? Is that what you said?
Yes, if you've watched Mean Girls, you get the reference.
I do. I wasn't expecting that. Anybody looking for Mean Girls on their bingo card today, take a drink. All right, Ethan Behrman, your thought on what these Republicans are doing, and if all of them running, even though they say they don't want Trump to win, are actually helping Trump.
Yeah, I don't think they're helping Trump. They're not helping anybody other than trying to promote their own images. I mean, look, I would suggest that the vast majority of Americans would be happier to vote for the fly that landed on Mike Pence's head than Mike Pence at this point. Look, the guy who stood up for democracy by refusing to cave to the insurrectionist crowd that appears to have been whipped up by a number of people, some of whom might still be in Congress, we'll find out here soon. He didn't endear himself to anybody. Chris Christie lost every last shred of self-respect when he had that weird prisoner terrorist view on his face after he got trounced by Trump in 2016. He's got no chance. I love to see it. I want to see Republicans waste their money, waste their time, because Trump is going to most likely get indicted here soon. And then what are the Republicans going to do? Because DeSantis, he ain't got it either.
Tommy, if it's Don versus Ron, who do you got?
This is difficult because I'm not going to make anybody happy with this answer, but those who have been watching me understand that while I love Donald Trump, I love what he did for our country, I wish he was our president now, things would be a lot different. I do believe that Ron DeSantis is our best bet to get back in that White House and to turn this country around. So I am in the Ron DeSantis camp at this point. I think that he is our best chance. I love him as the governor of Florida. Apparently so do many Californians because they have flocked there. And I think he's going to be our best shot, a winner and a president.
Ethan, who do you think, I mean, just political analysis aside, not who right. do you want, but who do you think is actually the strongest Republican nominee?
Well, I really do believe, so first I just want to disagree with Tommy for a second. There would be no Ukraine, there'd be no NATO, Russia and Putin would have gotten his way, and there might not even be a Taiwan if President Trump was still the president. But just objectively analyzing, look, Ron DeSantis can raise as much money as he wants, and I think that that's critical. He needs to raise a ton of money. But on a debate stage, if we actually get to that point, there is nobody on the Republican side that can beat Donald Trump on a primary debate stage. We saw him destroy all of them in 2016. That's what would happen to Ron DeSantis. His little white boots aren't going to help him up against Donald Trump on the stage.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there, but we enjoy your guys, you two, on a debate stage. This was really fun. Ethan, great to see you. Tommy, great to talk with you.
Our thanks to Tommy and Ethan and to Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Our thanks to you for listening. Next week, we're actually taking a week off, which doesn't happen very often. We're going to be replaying our interview with Sammy Hagar on TV, but you can listen to it right now. Just go back in the Issue Is podcast and take a listen if you haven't. It is one of our favorite shows. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks for more of The Issue Is. In the meantime, I hope you'll connect with me in social media. Let me know what you think of this show and tell your friends about it as well. Have a great one. See you soon.